Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 313. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. Still tired, but it's good. Almost got 2 week old now. It's crazy. Time goes fast. We're talking about almost mid-June, and we'll be in Arizona before we know it. I know I don't want to wish away the season or anything, but man, it's crazy just how fast like time goes. And I feel like when you're a parent, it goes even faster. I feel like it's just like trying to take in every moment and not always easy to do. It's like, man, you go about your day and it's like, dude, I feel like I just woke up. Where did time go? So yeah, I feel like I'm living like a weird time vortex right now where it's like every day is the same. So it should be back out at games this week. Greenville was on the road this past week and nobody was really around. I didn't want to travel too far with a 1 week old, but Greenville's back. So I'll probably hit some games this week and hopefully feel some more normalcy in my life this week.
What is that? What is normal? I don't even know what that is anymore.
It's a good question.
Yeah. But my daughter just had her 12th birthday a few days back. We had the party this weekend and she had a sleepover with some of her friends. And that's always fun. But yeah, she's 12 now. And I remember when she was just 2 weeks old and now she's 12. Yeah. Time just flies by. No better way to say it than that. Same thing in the baseball season, too. We're almost halfway through the baseball season. Teams are up to mid-60s for games played right now. We're probably, 38, 39% of the way through the season. This is crazy. But we both just put out some prospect rankings updates. So we'll talk some hitting prospect risers and followers, along with four more promotions. It's been hot and heavy with the promotions lately. Luckily, no demotions to talk about this show. We've had several demotions to talk about the last couple episodes. None, just all promotions this time, all positive. Four pretty interesting prospects here. And we got about, 10, 11, 12 prospect risers and followers to talk about. So pretty loaded show here. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our rankings are over there, daily write-ups, so much more, discords, a lot of great stuff on both of those platforms. And speaking of great stuff, Rotoballer has you covered with tons of great content, tools, and more to help you win and have fun this fantasy season and every fantasy season, every sport. Rotoballer has it covered. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. So we'll start out by talking about the one and only pitcher in this episode. This is very hitter-heavy show here. But Hurston Waldrop got the call, made his debut on Sunday. So today when we're recording this, Didn't do too well. Had a gave up 7 earned runs, but did have a 31% whiff rate, 32% CSW. So, you know, showed some glimpses of why he's one of the 10 best pitching prospects in the game for most people. Coming off a, he had a 2.92 ERA in 9 starts with AA Mississippi, and then had just 1 start with AAA Gwinnett, 3 earned and 6, but had 11 strikeouts to 1 walk there. And obviously, we know he can strike out batters. The stuff is nasty. But Chris, what really was encouraging to see from Waldrop over the last several weeks or so was the better strike throwing, the walk rate coming down. Because if that sticks, like, that's the big X factor for him, as it is for many pitchers, but especially for a guy like him. If he can continue, you know, doing what he's done over the last several weeks, if that sticks, we're looking at a, you know, high impact arm potentially. So I don't know if he's up for more than just this one start. We shall see. But long term, a lot to like with Waldrop.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of people on Twitter were overblowing how bad the start was by just looking at the box score. And he actually pitched extremely well. A pretty clean first inning. He did have a walk, but other than that, 4 batters faced. He faced 3-3, so the minimum in the second and the third. And honestly, like, the situation in the fourth inning was, yeah, he did allow a home run, and then he walked several batters after that. But looking at how it unfolded, you had a Lane Thomas single. You did walk Jesse Winker, so 2 on. You had 2 outs, though, because Eddie Rosario lined out. And then Luis Garcia had, like, a dinky bloop hit. It was a 69-mile-an-hour single off the bat. This found ground. And then that home run he gave up to Ruiz, obviously not something that you want to see. It did. He hit it 388 feet, 100 miles an hour off the bat. So he didn't obliterate it or anything, but he did hit it hard. It was a hard hit ball. And then 2 of the walks did come immediately after that. So you have to wonder if Waldrop was pressing a bit. So I do think, I will say that, like, maybe it wasn't as bad of a start as the, you look at the box score and you say, holy crap, 3 2/3, 7 earned, 4 walks. Yeah, 1 strikeout, you want to see more. He did have a league average strike rate, though, in the game. So the strike rate has still been good. The strikeouts, they'll be there. You look, and he did get whiffs with the splitter. I think that was the most important thing to note. He did have a 27% whiff rate and a 31% CSW. So he was getting whiffs, but I do think he's going to have to tinker with the pitch mix a little bit. The fastball's not good. Just brutally honest, the fastball's not good. It's got velocity, but the shape sucks. Like, he's going to have to figure out how to make that work, or he's going to have to locate it better, one or the other, because the location on it's been the issue. You can get away with some velocity in the minors, but major league hitters aren't going to be fooled even at 96 or 98. Like, he was sitting 96, touch 98. That's great, but the shape's just not good with Waldrop's fastball. I think that it's a below average fastball right now. Maybe it's probably like a 45. It's closer to a 50 than a 40. So closer to average than below average. But right now, the only thing propping it is the velo. So I'd like to see him throw more sliders and a heavy dose of splitters. That was definitely what you want to see, because that is his best pitch. But he wasn't fooling anybody with the fastball. He had 100% zone contact rate against it today, which obviously not ideal by any means. But at the end of the day, though, I will say I thought that Waldrop did a decent job of limiting hard contact. He did allow 4 hard hit balls, but nothing outrageous. 2 of the hard hits were grounders and ground outs, so that certainly helped. And he induced a lot of weak contact, too. I think that obviously this is somebody that's had less than 100 minor league innings, that this time last year was still pitching in college in the Super Regional and then pitching to go to the College World Series. So again, like, this is somebody that's so young. I hope the Braves don't stunt the development with Waldrop by pushing him. But I will say that I think Waldrop is better than, if you just looked at the box score today, he's really just way better than that. The start today was significantly better than what we saw from the box score standpoint. So I would move forward with caution about saying, like, it was a terrible start, blah, 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 because I did see a lot of that out there. It really wasn't, in my opinion. And so he'll be fine. I mentioned strike throwing command. That's huge. I think really today the fastball command was the issue. But throw more sliders, less four seam. We'll see how it works out. But yeah, I do think Waldrop will be fine long term. Nothing's changed. No evaluation's changed. Does he stick in the rotation? I hope so. we'll see. But right now, just play it by ear. I think that he's still probably worth a pickup in most formats because I do think better days are ahead.
Yeah, no, we've seen it with when you have elite of velocity, you can get by without the greatest fastball shape. But Waldrop doesn't have elite velocity. He's got decent velocity. He's at 95, 96, touched 98 today. That's good. But if you're averaging 96, that's above average velocity. But that's not what I would call great velocity. So it's harder to get away with a below average fastball shape in that regard. You know, if you saw 98, 99 sitting in that range, okay, that's a different story. But yeah, the splitter is absolutely filthy. It's been one of my favorite pitches to watch in all of baseball, you know, dating back to his days in college. So I love that pitch. Slider has some upside too. But he is one of my top 10 pitching prospects. Like I said, I have him as my number 7 pitching prospect right now behind Skeen. So graduate in the next couple of weeks. Jobe, Horton, Painter, Scott, Schultz, and Meyer. And then I got Waldrop, Tiedemann, Snelling running out my top 10. So right in that mix, right in that tier 2 or maybe tier 3 of pitching prospects. But yeah, we'll see what the next few days hold, if they keep him up or not. But I lied. There's actually 2 pitchers in this episode we're talking about because Drew Thorpe is next. The White Sox brought him up from AA. And he gets 2 starts to start off his career. So that's 2 start week. Had a 1.35 ERA, 0.87 WHIP, and 11 starts for AA Birmingham, along with a 7.6% walk rate, 25% strikeout rate. You know, a guy that has a absolutely phenomenal changeup. I saw him live twice last year. That changeup is really good, like 70 changeup. Slider's decent. Questions with Thorpe is, can he get by with his fastball in the major leagues? And I think he can to a degree. I don't think he's going to be a top of the rotation starter, but could he be a pretty good, like number 3 starter in the major leagues? Guy that can give you one of those higher floor number 3s? Absolutely. Even when he's throwing 91, 92, at least he commands it well. So that definitely helps a lot. But not as much upside as Waldrop, but he might have more value this season because it looks like he'll have a better chance of sticking. And obviously the White Sox past Crochet and Eric Fede have nothing. That rotation has been terrible. So they're not going to keep throwing out Nick Nastrini out there. So I think you could see some staying power here with Thorpe and some pretty good short-term value and decent long-term value too. I think he could be high-end number 3 with a high floor as well, but what are your thoughts here on Mr. Drew Thorpe there, Chris?
He's so interesting. Like, you look at the profile, and part of me wants to compare him to Gavin Stone. Like, yep. Looking at that kind of profile, the difference is that Thorpe's fastball is like low 90s, 91 mile an hour fastball. So it's like low below, which I don't love, but it's unique. It's a higher release from his frame. It's high IVB pitch, but the changeup, as mentioned, is the bread and butter here, where the changeup is going to be the go-to. He's going to lead the way with that pitch. It's low 80s. It actually gets a lot of ride and fade. Like, it plays extremely well off the fastball. So it's literally no vertical separation. Like, and I'm sure that Pitching Ninja will do this after start. Like, if you tunnel both the fastball and changeup, it's literally like identical, and then it just falls off the map. So I love the changeup. I think that's one of the better changeups in the minors. And then you look, he's got a cutter like mid upper 80s, and he's got a lower 80s slider. I think that Thorpe is going to be one of those guys that does come up and probably sticks unless things just go really bad. I think that there could be some ups and downs. A fastball could be hittable. I think that it's one of those where he's dominated minor league hitters with the changeup because that's a hard pitch to hit when it's that good and when it plays that well off the fastball. But the command is key here. It's really solid command overall. So I'm pretty excited to see what he does. It may be one of those boring profiles, but I think it can work. So I'm excited to see Drew Thorpe up. I'm just so glad we've seen these players, like guys getting the call. And I'm really pumped that I put a tweet out earlier. After today, there have been 118 players make their debut this year. That was up from 105 last year. Over the last week, we've had like 7 top 100 guys get called for debuts. Yeah. It's awesome. So, yeah, it's been really good to see. So I'm pretty excited to see the young guys getting chances.
Yeah, it's great to just go through my rankings in general, and then the ETA column just have all these debuted already on there. And we should get a bunch more over the next few days, few weeks, or other guys that are very close, or we could get up late season as well. Yeah, it's really encouraging to see. I love this. It's fun, for sure. The other two promotions here, both hitters, will go up to Seattle with Tyler Locklear, corner infield prospect, 51 games this season, 41 with AA Arkansas, 10 with AAA Tacoma, combined slash 293, 404, 520, 14 doubles, 9 home runs, and 236 plate appearances. Had a pretty solid showing out in the AFL last fall as well. And slash line this year is pretty damn close to the slash line last year. He was 288, 405, 502 last year in 85 games with 25 doubles and 13 home runs. A lot of extra base hit power here. Obviously, he's been, per game basis, very high in terms of extra base hits. He had 39 last year in 85 games. He has 25 this year in 51 games, so basically one every other game. Not a guy that's going to blow you away in any one area. Doesn't have massive power. He's not going to hit 300. But could he be a guy that hits 260, 270 with 25 home runs or so? Yeah, absolutely. Could he be up in a corner infielder, the guy you're starting as your corner infielder someday? Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like he's going to get some time to figure it out here. It sounds like they're going to start him pretty regularly moving forward. So we'll see what he can do in the major leagues. But a guy that still slept on a little bit, I think, just because he doesn't wow, doesn't have a lot of speed, doesn't have huge power. Not a boring profile, but not a sexy one either. I think he gets undervalued a little bit here. So I think he's a good target, and I think he's got a pretty bright future ahead of him.
I agree. I think that, the nice thing is that they've said, the Mariners have put it out there, he's going to play every day. This isn't a platoon situation. Like, he is going to play and get run. Now, Locklear is a really fun player. He's got some questionable contact. I think the timing has to be pretty impeccable with given the kind of bat waggle that he has going on. So, like, in that kind of thing, I wonder, like, how he does adjust to major league pitching, because there's been some contact questions in the minors. But the EVs are good. They've been consistently above average to plus throughout his minor league career. He's really solid. And I think you're right. I think that somebody that I am looking to add in pretty much all 15-team formats at least and see where it goes, because I think there could be some fun power there. He had a double today, traveled 380 feet. So Locklear maybe is the spark that the Mariners lineup needed, and I think he has a good chance to stick all year. So I'm very excited about his opportunity and certainly looking to add where I can.
Yeah, they definitely needed a spark. They've been pretty bad for most of the season here. It's nice that Rodriguez is finally getting going here over the last few weeks. That's huge, obviously, the big stud in the middle of their lineup. But outside of him, Crawford's been pretty mediocre. Rojas was good for like a week and a half. He's been bad ever since. Like, they're starting Mitch Haniger, Dominic Canzone, Dylan Moore. They're starting Dylan Moore regularly. That's what shows you. Though he's been pretty decent, I'll give him that, in his limited time. But yeah, definitely could use Locklear and four more Locklear types. But well, yeah, so he should definitely get some run moving forward here, and pretty solid bat. The last one here, this was a real head scratcher for me. Yeah, they needed a middle infielder with Brendan Rodgers going on the IL with a hamstring strain. But the Rockies promoting Adiel Amador from AA. Yeah, he's been red hot over the last week and a half or so. But that's really it. Like, he came into that, like, this red hot stretch of his puts him up to 194 now. I still like him. I thought he was dropped way too low in rankings coming into this little hot stretch he's had, because the contact skills are borderline elite. We've seen that. The approach is elite. It's a guy that has more walks than strikeouts in his career. Yeah, power speed is modest. It's not huge, but course field helps. So I thought he could be like 15, 20 home runs and steals in that range. But man, this is a weird call up. I don't know. I mean, yeah, he got a hit today, but I don't know. I'm not rushing to pick up Amador and redraft, but long term, I think he's still a good buy low. I think the perceived value dropped too much, but I don't think he's going to do much in this. And I could be wrong. I could eat my words here, but This is just a really head scratching move, but maybe you disagree. Maybe you thought it was a good call for them to bring him up.
No, I just, it makes zero. I can't figure out a reason why, other than Brendan Rodgers is hurt, but there has to be somebody else they could have brought up. Amador is not ready. Let's just be honest. The hit tool's good. And I do think from that standpoint, like, he does have a chance to maybe hit because he does make contact quite often. It is one of the best contact profiles in the minors. But I know he had a hot week or two, but still, there's too many ground balls. I think the power can be there. I think he can be a 15 home run bat long term, but I struggle to see it right now. I don't know. I guess they just didn't love the options in AAA at this point. Like, your middle infield options were like Aaron Shunk, Coco Montez, like Connor Kaiser. I guess that you might as well experiment. It's weird, though. I do expect Amador to struggle. I'm not sure that he's going to be, and he may stick. If the injuries, like, they've got a lot of injured guys in this lineup, like that Chris Bryant's injured, Brendan Rodgers is injured, Jordan Beck, Nolan Jones, Sean Bouchard. So all these guys, like, they've got openings. But for me, I'm not going immediately to run an ad Audio Amador. I'm not sure, like, from a fantasy counting stats perspective right now, how much you'll get. Long term, yeah, I think he'll be fine. But right now, I'm just not there.
Yeah, I think we're pretty similar in a lot of thinking here. Long term, I think he'll be good. Short term, not so sure he's going to provide much value. But hey, he's up, and if you need him in an infielder, maybe he can steal you a few bags or something like that. But all right, let's move on to our prospect risers and fallers here. As usual, we went with a little more risers than fallers. We have 6 risers and 6 and 5 fallers. We're starting with Augustin Ramirez with the New York Yankees. Last year, it was Ben Rice, who was the big catching prospect riser for the Yankees. And this year, it's Augustin Ramirez, who has just been tearing up the AA Eastern League so far. In 50 games, he's at 15 home runs, stole 12 bags as well, and slashing .281, .375, .578, 28 walks to 38 strikeouts in 224 plate appearances. Big-time power. I'm not sure how the Rice-Ramirez situation pans out. The Rice can play some first, so maybe he shifts there. The Ramirez has played first as well a little bit, but yeah, definitely love what I'm seeing at Ramirez. I said the power alone is impactful. He's showing that he can have a pretty good approach, even throw in a couple bags, steal a couple bags here and there. I don't think he's going to be a big stolen base guy. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't have a ton of speed, but if he can just give you at least 5 a year, and that's just a little added bonus there if he's keeping that catcher eligibility long term. So, yeah, big riser up my rankings here. I think he's now my number 3 catching prospect and the guy that's pushing top 50 overall as well. So, yeah, big rise so far for Augustin Ramirez.
Yeah, he's in my top 50. I think that the bat's legit, and it has been for a while. Like, you look years ago, and he had the pop, and I really thought he would break out to this extent last year, and never really came. But this year, now we're seeing it materialized where, dude, the power is just unreal. Like, he hit 3 homers on Friday. So that was obviously a lot of fun. The exit velocities are off the charts. Like, his 90th percentile exit velocity is like one of the best in the minors. It's 108 miles an hour, which is very good. That's Junior Caminero, like around where he is. Just telling you where the power is. And he makes good contact too. So Augustin Ramirez certainly deserves to be a big riser. And I think he probably continues to trend up. I wouldn't be shocked if he made his debut this year at all. And like I said, Ben Rice is certainly looming. Curious how that works out. The Yankees catcher situation has not been great right now. We could see it sooner than later, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's a situation where they both catch some. They maybe get some DH time in, some first base time. That'd be nice. If they both can keep catcher eligibility, that would be great. But yeah, so I actually looked. I have him in semi top 50 as well, 46 overall. Yep, I was right. 3rd catching prospect behind Samuel Basayo and Harry Ford, just ahead of Ben Rice and Ralphie Velazquez, and then Ethan Salas a little bit further down, Kyle Teal. So, yeah, definitely love Augustin Ramirez right now. Huge power, and Yankee Stadium, this is a guy that gets like 500 plate appearances, could be a 25-plus homer catcher for sure. No doubt in my mind. Next riser here, we got two Seattle Mariners. We'll start with Felnin Celestin, who was their big international signing last year and is having a really hot start to the season here. As I'm pulling up his stats, but he's been one where he's already in my top 50 overall, just already pushing top 25, just given the all-around skills he has and what he's done so far in just 24 games at the complex level. 312, 398, 484, 10 extra base hits, 2 home runs, 4 steals, 14 walks to 22 strikeouts. So not a huge sample size so far, Chris, after a good start, and it has that superstar prospect kind of profile that we look for, a guy that could be a top 10 prospect maybe by the end of this year.
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility that he could be. I pushed him to 30 overall in the update. I think that he's a star in the making. He's got everything that you want to dream on, from the frame to the tools, the projection. Like, Celestin just looks the part right now, and I'm very much in on him. The start, like, considering he didn't play last year because he was hurt, how he's come back, like, in game action has been very impressive. I know it's just 2 home runs and 108 plate appearances so far, but we are looking at some really solid slash line, 312, 398, 484, 4 stolen bases. I think this is a profile that I certainly want to bet on. I think that he could be one of those guys that really takes off.
Yeah, and Seattle does, you know, pretty good job developing. Now, they always seem to have a bunch of rising, just especially hitting prospects, you know, every single year. And yeah, they have a few more this year, because the next guy we're talking about, Johnny Fermello, and you could even throw Cole Young into this. Like, Cole Young's been, you know, hitting pretty well this year. But Fermello here, 19 years old, won't be 20 until September. He's getting off to a good start. This is a guy that skipped complex level, went to low A, and is slashing 267, 402, 426, 17 extra base hits, 18 steals, 36 walks to 51 strikeouts in 219 plate appearances. And is also hitting, you know, really well over the last month or so. Like, in month of May, 317, 462, 495, 1-for-15 here in June so far in 3 games. But, you know, running wild on the base pass here, and definitely a guy that has a fantasy-friendly profile and could be a really intriguing fantasy bat if the power comes along too. So a lot to like here with Johnny Fermello for sure.
Yeah, no, Fermello is legit. He's got great speed. He's shown decent power so far, in my opinion. Everything looks good under the hood, and the contact skills are there. Farmello's off to an incredible start, and I think he's only going to continue to move up boards just based on the performance. Could he get the call soon? Maybe. I think it's a possibility, and I hope he does, just to see how he fares against better pitching. In my opinion, he's ready. He looks to me like he could be a 20 home run bat. Obviously, can steal a ton of bags, should hit for a decent batting average. So I think that with Johnny Fermello, like, this guy looks like one of the best hitters in single A right now. And I really want to bet on that profile. I think the Mariners have done a really good job, and I think that could continue. And he looks like the next guy that could take that step forward. I'm pretty in on Fermello at this point.
Yeah, as am I. This is a very fantasy-friendly profile. Did they hit it out of the park or what, Seattle, this last draft? They got Colt Emerson, Johnny Fermello, Ty Pete, Ben Williamson, Aiden Smith. That was a really good draft at the top for the Seattle Mariners. Like I said, Cole Young, who they got the year before that, has been hitting very well. So they have a bunch of guys that are, you know, shooting up rankings right now. And yeah, Johnny Fermello, very fantasy-friendly profile and a big riser right now. Next one, we'll get out of Seattle, go to Detroit with a prospect whose grandmother famously was giving points to Gryffindor. I kid. Kevin McGonagall, who I just think of Professor McGonagall from Harry Potter every time I see his name, was the 37th pick by Detroit this past June out of high school in Pennsylvania. Right now, slashing 347, 430, 492, 10 steals, a couple of home runs, more walks than strikeouts in 33 games. And then that's already impressive right there. Pretty good slash line. Then you look under the hood and there's a lot more good there, Chris. So he's a guy that's in my top 100 now. And I probably wasn't even high enough with him, putting him around 90, because this is a guy that could be top 30 to 40 pretty damn soon.
Yeah, he's obviously looked really good and made a sizable jump for me. My concern, and I know it's always my concern, is that he's so small. Like, he's 5'5". It's a very tiny profile. And obviously, everything's going to look good. Like, the chase rate's going to look good because he doesn't really have, you know, too much of a zone. He's very patient. Like, he knows the zone. He knows his zone well. And a lot of his hard hits have been pulled ground balls. That's a little bit of my concern here, but the contact is pretty elite. 85% overall, 94% in zone. Like, those numbers are very good. And I think if the power can tick up even the slightest, I can just lift the ball when he is making that kind of contact, then I'll be a little more inclined to go higher on him. The feedback, the data, obviously the power, it suggests, okay, like, there's, you know, average, below average power, but the fact that there's so many pulled ground balls, the feedback I've gotten from people that have seen him has been good, but it's, don't go too high on this guy. So I like McGonagall. I've got him in the top 100, but I want to see a little more of that juice, like, lifted balls before I really go all in.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And that's an issue we've seen with a lot of prospects in the low minors, but if he can figure it out, he could be a pretty fun middle infielder for fantasy purposes.
Yeah.
Next one here, a guy that I think is being really slept on right now, and I was guilty of that as well. Fully admit it, I corrected that in my last update here, put him just inside my top 100, and that's Luke Kuechel, second round pick last year out of Arizona State to the Minnesota Twins. A little under 22 years old, he'll be 22 in mid-August, and having a really good year so far between high A and double A. 324, 440, 510, 15 doubles, 7 home runs, 15 steals, or even caught twice. Nearly as many walks as strikeouts as well, 35 to 39 in 250 plate appearances. Guy that's always been a big OBP guy. Not huge power, but I think he could be like a 15 homer guy over a full season. So I guess in that mid-teens range. And he could be 20 plus steals as well. So again, not a sexy profile, not, you know, doesn't have the huge power, huge speed, but does a lot of things well and doesn't really have any major red flags either. I think this guy keeps sneaking up on people, and before we know it, maybe he's a guy that's flirting with top 50 status overall. But where do you have Kuechel, and what are your thoughts on him here, Chris?
Yeah, he's in my top 100 for sure. And you know, he's, I think, got potential to rise a little higher. I don't think it's like a super flashy profile. Like, it's not one that's going to get people like super excited. He was, I think, the best hitter in high A. He got the promotion and he's still hitting well. I think that with Kuechel, like, you're looking at that kind of guy that's going to get on base, going to hit for average. His power numbers have ticked up a little bit this year, which I really like to see. Like, when you added some pop, like, okay, yep. Like, we'll certainly love to see that. And I think that it's just the kind of well-roundedness of the profile and how he's progressed so much. He was good last year, don't get me wrong, but he's really taken that step forward this spring because the contact rates are like some of the best in baseball. The chase rate, extremely good. He could be a really good, like, multi-position guy and provide play across the infield and give you nice eligibility with a really good feel to hit. I do think the power is probably better than he's given credit for. And I think that he could be one that's just so sneaky right now that he's not really getting the love that he deserves. But I do think that he's now garnering a little more of that love, which is good. I think it's 55s at least across the board, and he's a good runner. I don't know. I'm pretty in here with Kuechel.
Yeah, me too. I think this is the type of profile that always gets slept on a little bit. But he can definitely provide a lot of good and maybe be a multi-position eligibility guy as well, like you mentioned. So, yeah, definitely like Kuechel a lot right now. Last riser, we're going to Cincinnati with Jay Allen II, a guy that I was incredibly high on back when they drafted him 3 years ago. I was 30th overall pick back in 2021. I had him ranked very highly for FYPD, had him ranked highly in my overall prospect rankings once he broke in, and had a pretty decent start to his career. It was only 19 games, but you know, hit 328, 440, 557 with three home runs and 14 steals in 19 games at the complex level back in 2021. But 2022 and 2023 were just absolutely disastrous for him on many fronts. Outside of stealing 43 bags, he was still stealing a ton of bags, 43 in 91 games and then 16 and 31. But outside of that, was not hitting for average and was limited to only 122 games combined in those 2 years with five home runs. So it was really just him stealing bags. It was limited due to injury. Again, 31 games, 129 plate appearances last year, but storing back with a vengeance this year, 299, 431, 530, eight home runs, 13 steals so far in 39 games for High A Dayton. Guy that's obviously always been a big-time runner, tremendous athlete, sneaky, not a big power guy, but I think he could be maybe a 50-grade raw power guy who, if they don't trade him, we'll get Great American Ballpark to help elevate that a little bit. Very fun profile, and this is the guy we thought he could be. Took him a few years, and hopefully he can stay healthy, but I'm pretty much buying into what I'm seeing here from Jay Allen. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that he was obviously hurt last year, and that kind of affected him a bit, but the Jay Allen that we're seeing this year is certainly one that I think could be a very good player for a long time, super good athlete. That's the kind of player I like to bet on, is that kind of athlete that he is. He's a former first round pick too, so he's got the pedigree. And so far, it's looked good. He's got, you know, eight home runs, 13 stolen bases to this point with a 431 OBP. It's wild how high that OBP is. He's not showing many signs of slowing down at this point, but I do think that Allen is just one of those guys that, yeah, I think that certainly worth buying back in on, just given how everything has transpired this year, how he looks fully healthy. And I think that's really the biggest thing, is that we know that he's healthy now, and it's completely showing. I'll bet on this profile for Allen because I think that he's one that's going to be really good. And he was buzzy at the beginning of the year, hasn't been as buzzy recently, but you know, the numbers are still there. I would certainly add him.
Yeah, even earlier in the year when he was getting talked about, I don't think he was getting talked about enough. So I think he's still a pretty good value target here with potential for a pretty big ROI, given the upside that he possesses offensively. So yeah, definitely going after Jay Allen wherever I can. But time for the followers here. We got five, starting with Spencer Jones of the New York Yankees. So we started off with a riser from the Yankees. We'll start off this one with a faller from the Yankees. As I was mentioning to Chris before we started recording, Jones is becoming one of the harder prospects for me to rank. Obviously, you look at him, he's 6 foot six, 235, 240 pounds. He can hit, I've seen him hit mammoth home runs. Like, obviously, he steals a ton of bag. Like, you see the upside. It's not hard to see the upside and dream on that. But at the same time, he's struggled for a good half season now, dating back kind of the end of last year. Got up to double A late in the season for 17 games. He hit 261. It was fine. Three home runs, eight steals, but wasn't hitting for as much power as he was in high A. And then this year, five home runs in 45 games with a 367 slug and only hitting 228, striking out a ton, 70 strikeouts in 45 games. So, Chris, as you were mentioning, the real question now is, can Spencer Jones make enough contact to capitalize on the power speed blend that he does possess?
Yeah, and I don't know if he can. I think that every time he hits a home run, it seems like everybody on Twitter just is always back. But I don't really see that as the case, to be honest. I think he's got a lot to prove before we say, all right, we can really buy into this profile, because it's been really ugly this year with the contact skills. They are not there at all. And even as we look at rolling contact rates, like even recent when he's, you know, seemingly had a little better performance, it's not good. The contact rate on the year is at 62%. That's obviously absolutely brutal. Like, anything below 70 is worrisome. So that's not improved at all. And I look, like, over the last week, it has ticked up a bit. It's still 67%. And he's a 30% strikeout rate. So I don't know. I'm not really in on him. I think that he's interesting. I think that he could materialize it. He just looks like he's lacking confidence completely right now. And that's the concerning aspect to me, is that he just doesn't appear to have any confidence at all. So maybe he finds it, gets back on track. But right now, I'm having a hard time buying in at all on this profile.
Do you have Augustin Ramirez ranked ahead of him now?
I don't. I'm not sure I do, but I probably...
Probably getting pretty close.
I think I had him close. Let's see. I had Spencer Jones at 41, which I don't even like that. And I have Augustin Ramirez at 50. So it's close. I probably prefer Augustin, like sitting here talking about it.
It's funny. Did you ever think you'd be saying that in second week of June? Entering this, if I told you like that this was going to happen 2 months into the season, before the season started, you would have probably looked at me funny.
Yeah.
Because Jones was obviously considered like an elite prospect after last year. And Ramirez, people knew his name, but he wasn't really ranked highly at all. He wasn't really on the map in terms of prospect rankings for the most part. So, yeah, it shows you how quickly things can change. It's been 2 months, and Ramirez is about to pass Spencer Jones in both of our prospect rankings. I have them about 12 spots apart right now, and that gap is shrinking a lot more every update. So, July update, it might be Ramirez in front. We shall see. But Jones, he's so fun. So I'm hoping he turns it around, because if he could, like, the upside, you dream on it, right? But you can't dream on the upside if the contact skills aren't there. And right now, they are not there. And you can say the same thing about this next guy, Bemelec Ortiz, who started off the season okay in the, month of April, 260, 333, 455, 7 doubles, 2 home runs, only 13 strikeouts in 87 plate appearances. But then since then, it's been rough, to say the least. So since May 1st, he's at 100 plate appearances on the nose, 110, 180, 176 slash line, 5 walks to 30 strikeouts. That's the same question here, Chris. Obviously, Ortiz isn't the athlete that Jones is. He isn't going to steal a ton of bags, but this is a guy that was looked at as a potential big source of power. But at this point, do you think he makes enough contact to ever fully capitalize on that power?
Yeah, that's a good question. His contact rates were actually good last year, and so I'm wondering, is he hurt? I don't know.
Like, what happened? Yeah, that's like the question. What happened?
It's zero insight like to that, just speculating. But in all honesty, like, his underlying data last year was very similar to Xavier Isaac, other than the chase rate. Like, Isaac's like an elite chase rate, and Ortiz was like league average. So those are the only kind of things. And it's weird, because I'm looking at it, and right now Ortiz has actually been making, like, his contact around the year is respectable, but it's trended in the wrong direction, like, over the last month or so. And so, yeah, I think that either he's just completely lost confidence, he's playing hurt, I have no idea. But it's weird, after seeing how good he was all last year, to fall off to this level. So I don't know. Yeah, he certainly should and deserves to fall, but I want to do a little more digging here and see what's actually going on.
Yeah, I still have him in my top 100. He did fall a decent amount, but I kept him inside my top 100 for now, because, like you said, things looked good last year. This was a pretty trendy riser the end of last year and in this offseason into this year. So didn't want to go too haywire with the drop here, but yeah, definitely been a rough last several weeks here for Bemelec Ortiz. Next one up here, we got Arjun Namala with the Toronto Blue Jays, who really all he's done so far in his professional career is walk a good amount, 34 walks in 177 plate appearances. But outside of that, not doing a whole lot. Career 171, 345, 307 slash. This year in 32 games, 165, 299, 304. He was one of the more buzzy names in last year's draft class among all the huge amount of high school talent we had in that draft. He was definitely one of the top names there, but just has been trending the wrong way literally ever since the draft. He's still fun. He's shown us glimpses here and there. He had a couple, like, a hot week to start the season, or early on the season, I should say. But outside of that, he hasn't really done much with the bat. Do you have any faith in the bat anymore? I know it's probably too early to say that. It's too early to write him off. 18 years old, 41 games in the minor leagues. But maybe we went too high on him during FYPD rankings. That's what I'm wondering right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to jump completely off ship. This guy was a guy that played cricket. Like, you know, I think he's still like a young in terms of baseball. So I think he could be fine, but it's been quite ugly. Hit the dev list for a month. Back at the complex and really hasn't done that much. He's only three games back at the complex, but still, it's been really discouraging because I thought he looked really good in spring training. That was the reason I was more in on him because I was like, man, this guy is playing in Major League spring training. Like, he looked pretty decent. I'm like, okay, like maybe he can be like something, somebody that looks really good that I really like. And then I don't know. It's been weird to see. I hope we'll see a rebound, but yeah, my confidence is a little bit lower than it was on Namala, even though I'm going to give him the time. We are still talking a pretty small sample here of 29 games in single A with some struggles, but yeah, he probably needs to spend the rest of the summer at the complex and work on the things he needs to work on and go from there. But yeah, right now it's been pretty rough.
Yes, it certainly has, and Rafa is putting it nicely. Next name on the list, Ricardo Cabrera with the Cincinnati Reds. This one might be a little bit of a head-scratcher for some people if you're just looking at his surface stats because they've been pretty solid so far this year. 283, 359, 476 slash line in 212 games for high A Daytona with 14 doubles, 6 home runs, and 7 steals. Again, that looks pretty solid. As Chris, you were saying before we started recording here, there are some, I don't know if red flags is the right way to put them, but you know, maybe there are some red flags under the hood here with Ricardo Cabrera.
There's major red flags, in my opinion. You look, and I don't like anything that I see under the hood. And yeah, you don't get, I actually think I've seen people moving him up like significantly. I'm like moving him down significantly. Let's talk about the positives. Okay, he's a 19-year-old in single A. He'll be 19 all year. And on the surface, it looks pretty good. 6 home runs, 7 stolen bases, 283, 358, 476. So really good slash, a 138 WRC plus. It's like, all right, let's move this guy up because he looks really good. But I'm kind of sitting back and saying, oof, like there's some stuff under the hood that just if you're listening to this and people in your league love him, like I'm selling. To be honest, like I think there's some good name value there because just hear me out. A 97.9 mile an hour, 90th percentile exit velocity. That's like worst, like bottom barrel. Like we're talking about even for his age, like I'm looking at like 30 grade power. There's an 85 mile an hour average EV, similar cases. Like this is not great at all. And it's not like, yeah, guys run low averages, but like, that's really low. I don't like that. Contact rate, 64%. That doesn't reflect anything at all with that batting average. Zone contact, 75%. That's so bad. Yeah, it's okay, but I don't love it. Chase rate, 34%. Very aggressive swinger too. He's swinging at quite a few pitches. The barrel rate's not good. I don't know. I think that this is a prime selling opportunity for him. Too many ground balls, too many whiffs. He doesn't hit the ball hard at all. Yeah, if the opportunity's there to cash out, I would certainly do so. His max EV this year is 103.8. Like, his max is like where I want to see a player's 90th percentile. And obviously, that's as they mature. The MLB average 90th percentile is like 103, but that's his max. So I'm just not confident in this profile. I guess some are, but I'm not. So sell, in my opinion.
All right. We round up the show with two more guys that are struggling in the power department. We got Luis Lara with the Milwaukee Brewers and Luis Angel Acuña with the New York Mets. Luis Angel Acuña so far this year, 58 games, 266 plate appearances with AAA Syracuse, 3 home runs, 248, 301, 350 slash line. And Luis Lara is down in high A Wisconsin. 0 home runs this year in 41 games, 181 plate appearances, 266, 350, 331 slash line. Start with Luis Lara. It's not his third year in professional baseball. He was in the DSL in 2022, fared decently there. Then Milwaukee jumped him over to the complex to the Carolina League, low A. And they got a little bit of time in high A end of the season. And then the entire year so far this year in high A. Four home runs and a 360 slug, 086 ISO in 186 games. I mean, he's a great runner. He's got 56 steals so far in 186 games. Though he has been caught 24 times, he can draw or walk, keeps the K rate in check. So there are some good here in the profile, which is why I still have him top 200 overall. But at the same time, these guys, even Luis Angel Acuña, who's, you know, pretty mediocre this year outside of the stolen base departments, these guys that have minimal power are just not guys that I think are wise investments for Dynasty. Because if you project them for anything lower than like 10, 12 home runs, it's just going to be hard to provide consistent fantasy value, you know, at the highest level. And Acuña is a guy that I thought could get around 15 home runs. I saw him get to some pull side pop, some take batting practice and, hit some good ones out the left field. But I'm starting to doubt that's even there. Is he more than a 7-8 homer guy? That way you need the average to be there. You need a lot of speed. It's just you need a lot of other things to go well and to be a guy that's not like a Gerard Dyson type who's, you know, maybe got a little bit of value here and there, but nothing that'll stick long term. So, yeah, guys like Luis Acuña, I mean, I'm still holding out a little bit of hope for him, but Luis Lara, Nelson Rada, these are just guys that I see a lot higher in other rankings, but their lack of power has me keeping them a lot lower. But what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, so with Lara, my issue is that, one, he doesn't produce power, and two, he hits it on the ground. Like, very high ground ball rate, 57% ground ball rate this year. Like, the fly balls are just not healthy fly balls either, which isn't great. He is making contact. Like, Lara is a really good contact hitter, and he's shown that. Like, he's somebody that I do really like the contact profile, and he's aggressive, and he still makes contact. Running 80% overall contact rate this year is really good. Results in a low strikeout rate, but the counting stats aren't there. He has hit two total home runs since coming stateside. Zero this year. So that's concerning, running a .065 ISO. Doesn't hit the ball hard, and it's into the ground. So Lara, like, I faded him a little bit for that reason. Stolen bases are great. But when your OBP is higher than your slug, that's my concern there. So Acuña is a little bit of a different kind of beast. He does actually have some pretty solid EVs where his ninth percentile is right at MLB average, 103.5. So that's encouraging. The average EV is near 88 miles an hour. So those numbers look good. I'm like, all right, like, for somebody his size, like, we can take that, and it's pretty solid. But he's not getting results. Again, it's a ground ball issue. I think guys really struggle to change their launch angle. Man, Acuña, even still, the contact's good. It's like 77% overall, 92% in zone. That's awesome. The chase rate's very high, 37%. But, man, the underlying data looks really good. But here's the issue. When you hit into the ground, it doesn't really matter. And so I'm very worried that Acuña is not going to be able to really get to much power because he can't lift. And that's going to hinder the batting average too when he's not getting to healthy launch angles. His line drive rate's very low right now. It's 16%. That's very low. A lot of infield fly balls. It's a very low home run to fly ball rate as well. So yeah, Acuña, at least there's some encouraging things under the hood, especially given his age and size. Like, he just turned 22 and he's smaller as well, like Luis Lara. But he is giving me some signs to say, okay, he is hitting the ball hard. He's making good contact. It's just a ground ball rate. And that's the fear and concern with Luis Angel Acuña for me.
Yeah, there's still, like I said, there's still some good in these profiles. All these guys, even Nelson Rada, Luis Lara, Luis Acuña, there's still some positives here. But like I said, the power not being there is just a big impact for me in my rankings. And I'm probably still even too high on Acuña. This is a guy that could fall to my top 100 soon if he doesn't start hitting for more power. Yeah, probably. But not going overly right now for even he's not even hitting from a lot of average. Like, the contact skills you mentioned are still there. Doesn't strike out a whole lot, which is good too. You know, something that was a little bit more of a problem for him in the low minors. But yeah, just not very encouraged by what I've seen from these guys right now. But that is going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. make sure you're checking out the dynastydugout.com, toolshedfantasy.com, and rotoballer.com for more work from Chris and I. And we will see you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.